Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. This is our 150th episode. I never thought it would last this long, because honestly, I don't particularly care for that John fellow. Anyhow, against our better judgment, the rules, and even, some may say, our human wills, we will now review Dungeons & Dragons again. It's a tradition on System Mastery. Welcome back. I'm Jeff, joined as always by your co-host, John.
Yeah.
Team Kia of El Cajon.
Team Kia of El Cajon.
Sorry. That's the thing that we do.
I can't stop doing it.
It's true. I've not seen you stop doing it yet.
Never.
So this is going to be episode 150, John. Did you think it would last this long?
Well, I mean last year, yes.
Yeah. So, how about since episode one?
No.
It may be like a 10-episode thing, and then we'd be done.
Yeah, I had two general things on it. I was like, either we're going to attempt to make this and like not get past episode two, because we'll just keep trying and failing.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it'll go a year, and then life will get in the way, and we won't be able to keep doing this.
Life's gotten in the way several times, but damn it, we persevere.
It's true, honestly. We have missed maybe like twice, and even then it's been like, oh, a few days later we'll put it out anyway.
Yeah, we try our best. But so one of the traditions we started pretty early on was that every 25th episode or something was going to be a Dungeons and Dragons edition. Because people, although Dungeons and Dragons is a big deal and not a forgotten wonder of the role-playing game industry, everyone already knows all about it, people like to hear us talk about it.
You know, it's fun to have a almost like yearly celebration that's just us talking about something that isn't weird and obscure.
Oh, thank God. I was worried for a second that it was just we would have to be a rigorous thing and not just a fun celebration, because frankly, I've never read 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons. I don't intend to, and I was kind of hoping to just sort of follow along behind you and say, yeah,
a lot
throughout the course of that's what I read.
Yeah, the Kaiser.
Wait, the Kaiser? Have you read 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons?
Of course.
Of course. I was testing you.
Ah, as you can see in my guide to vaudeville.
How to lie and get away with it. it's fun to do these because, I mean, everyone's intimately familiar with them anyway, and it's kind of fun to just do a yearly check-in on D&D.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we ran out of editions that aren't currently in print, and for a while there was a pretty solid chance that we just weren't going to do this one.
There was a solid chance you weren't going to do this one.
Yeah.
I was going to do it regardless of what you said.
I wasn't going to publish it.
But then I was going to self-publish it on Amazon through audible.com. Hey, guys, do you listen to Audible?
I mean, no one listens to Audible. They listen to podcasts that are presented and available for download
Audible
website.
They listen to books.
Or podcasts.
On Audible.
Yeah, on Audible. It works for both. You can do both. It is also a podcast hosting front. It's also a front for drug smuggling. I don't know how.
Audible drugs.
Yeah, you can listen to a download an MP3 of some drugs.
Ooh, cocaine.mp3.
There's an F Plus episode from way back where that was actually a thing, that there were like people who were passing around, I forget what they called it, like oral or binaural coding, that was like just music but had tones and stuff in it. That was like, oh, it'll get access the direct pathways of your brain and simulate whatever. And a lot of people were like, oh, can you make a meth one? Like, yeah, of course we can. We can make whatever you want.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that you believe we can make, we'll definitely make.
This one gives you boners. So, anyway, that's what our show is. If you download the boners.mp3.
Go to our Patreon. If you're at the correct tier, you'll find a boner.mp3 in there.
Yeah, instant boners automatically from listening. If you have a dick, it'll give you a boner. If you don't have a dick, a boner will be provided.
Boners are provided complimentary.
You just have to find the right Patreon level.
That's right.
Keep trying.
It's secret.
No one's gotten it yet.
Yeah, it's a very specific number.
And it's not the Ray Liotta number.
And it's not $69. You might think it's that.
You might think it's $69. Yeah.
But it's not.
It's not, because that's not instant boners.
It's $42,069.
That's correct, yeah. There's an extra zero in there.
Hey.
Yeah. Okay, so how you doing?
Why is there an extra zero in there?
Because I put it in there.
Why? What?
Yeah, I put an extra zero in there.
Where?
In the zeros column.
In the zeros column. Yeah. Everybody remembers from math
now there's
the
two.
Zeros column.
Now there's two. So, Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition is an edition of the game that came out around, what, like 2000-something? Five, is that right?
Nah, man, that's way
You're right.
Old.
It was yeah, okay, sorry. That's my bad. That's my bad for saying. I think I actually meant to say 2015.
Yeah, that sounds closer.
2015 is definitely the correct year, not a different year that I'm not looking up right now.
I'm definitely not feverishly flipping through the Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition Player's Handbook.
Oh, everything on this
trying
page.
To find the thing I need.
Oh, shoot. I'm trying to find it on the page. Oh, there you go. First printing, August 2014. I had to look on the one page of the 5th Edition D&D Handbook that I personally object to, too.
Oh, yeah,
it's on
the one
same
that
page.
Has the special contributions by.
Yeah, that particular line of credits where they give some folks who should not have been given credit for this book credit for this book.
Yeah, you hear that, Ken Height? Fuck off.
Yeah, get out of here, Ken Height and Mozzarella or whatever.
Yes, Mozzarella.
I said Mozzarella, not Mozzarella. Don't you try and make a
mozzarella.
Joke.
Mozzarella. Special contributor to 5th Edition, a Mozzarella.
Well, anyway, so 5th Edition D&D came out around 2014, so it's had about a five-year run now.
Yeah.
But we are only going to be talking about the Player's Handbook, same as we always do when we do these game reviews.
Though, honestly, it's a little easier to do that than when we've done other D&D editions, because the publication schedule for 5th Ed has been very slow, and I would say like a good 80% of it is just modules.
Yeah, the thing is, the publication schedule isn't slow. It's that the publication choices are endless modules and leveling campaigns. And honestly, that's probably not a bad idea, financially speaking, because that's what people who already have the Player's Handbook buy. People who are, oh, I need Ghosts of the Salt Marsh so I can run more adventures.
Well, the thing that I'm looking at is this is the first edition that really tries to avoid the whole, like, splat bloat.
Oh, that's true.
Because you
yeah.
don't have, like, here's the book of 50 million rogue options.
I mean, yet. But you're right. I mean, there's a few of them floating around out there. Mostly, I remember reading people's early complaints for this edition that anytime a splat book could come out, it was like, what's new in here? Spells for wizards. We've got spells for wizards here. Choose your spells for wizards.
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously added a lot of races, mostly the monster ones.
Yeah, races are particularly easy to do because there's not that much to them.
But what they haven't done is given us really new classes.
I don't think there's
they've
an official...
They've just added subclasses to things.
Yeah, and I don't think there's an official new class yet. There are more classes out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, artificer. There's like the artificer, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's some like guest-created fan classes and stuff. Like, Matt Mercer's got his own class.
Yeah.
The Ilnicker or something. I forget. It's like a demon thing.
Well, it's the, you know, the witch hunter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the witch hunter also exists, actually. It's sort of a ranger subclass hybrid thing created by Mr. Vinwise Dieselson.
Yes, Vinwise Diesel.
Dieselson.
Son. Sonson.
Diesel Sonson. He's Icelandic. And it's the character that the movie The Last Witch Hunter inspired. And it's sort of a bad class, so sorry. Yeah. Anyway, in the Player's Handbook, what will you find that differentiates this game from previous editions?
Less stuff.
Yeah. Weirdly, a lot of the scuttlebutt, when you look at the early internet like forums and stuff about this game, a lot of people are like, I like this game because it has less stuff.
Yeah.
The last edition had too much stuff.
I think this is going to be my hot take.
Mm.
They may have course corrected slightly too hard.
You thinking that the pendulum swung too far the other way?
Oh, yeah. It was swanging.
Big swanging pendulumato.
Because in 4th Ed, everyone was like, oh, no, there's so many things. Look at this. Mm. It's like I've got to pick a thing every level.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I don't want to get into edition warring like right
no,
away.
But 5th Ed, the thing I notice right away is there's not a whole lot of choice.
No.
Outside of pretty much level 3.
Yeah.
Every class has a level 3 choice, and that's going to be like, now you pick your subclass.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a rogue, you're like, okay, what do you want to be? An assassin, a thief, an arcane trickster? Great. You pick that at level 3, and then you go from there.
So, okay, this is, I've read some early interviews with, like, Merles and Crawford and what have you, who designed the game, and their take on why that level 3 choice thing exists. And they're like, oh, we took all the Paragon paths and prestige classes and what have you, and the kits from 2nd, 3rd, and 4th edition, respectively, and we kind of consolidated them down into the subclass things, so you still get to kind of make a choice and shape your character in a direction. But their thought basically was, now you get to do it in a level that people actually play the game at.
Which I like. There's a lot of things in the game that I like. I don't want to try and come out as being anti-5th edition for a lot of the things they did.
No, I think the game did a pretty good job. Most of my primary complaints about 5e are like moral ones. So itself is just a pretty much a basic D&D.
Oh, I've got mechanical complaints. Sure, Don't you worry about that.
Mechanical complaints that can exist. But realistically, the edition war stuff doesn't really... The game's fine. It plays fine. It's okay. Whatever. All my complaints are like, maybe the people who are in charge of this game shouldn't be.
Yeah. Maybe Mike Merle should fight me IRL.
Maybe Mike Merles is a thumb wearing a suit.
Maybe Mike Merles would be happier with his head in a toilet.
Now, people are immediately going to point out that Merles worked on 4th edition as well. Yeah, sure. The bad parts of it. Yeah. He ruined
4th edition.
Yeah, he got into 4th edition like a fucking kudzu and ruined it from the inside, and then they let him write the next one. It's like a cuckoo bird wearing a polo shirt. Sorry, that was the first of several outbursts, I'm sure.
Man, I can't wait for all the letters where, what did Merles do? Why are you so angry?
Look it up. Just go on the internet and look it up.
Just figure it out.
You found us on the internet. You can find this.
So, yeah, the whole deal with 5th Ed is they really stripped it down to its very base ideas for things.
That seems to have been the concept.
Well, one of the big things they had was rulings, not rules.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to make it so that they're like, here's a lot more sort of generic things. We don't want to make rules for everything. We want to let the GMs decide what they want things to be.
Yeah,
that just means we didn't want to decide what anything is.
Yeah, their whole thing where they were like, we're putting the power back in the hands of the DM. It was like, I don't feel like it ever really left.
I mean, it's basically the exact same. You just didn't provide rules, so now there's more spells that have vague wording that you can argue with.
Yeah, so basically you put power back in the hands of the DM by turning the game back into an argument. So, you know, good job.
You did it.
But they tried to streamline and they tried to design more around the old school D&D fantasies. So basically, a lot like 4th edition was, and 3rd edition for that matter, this game is no longer trying to emulate the genre conventions of fantasy storytelling. Like, you're not using this to recreate Conan. You're using this to recreate the Dungeons and Dragons you played in a garage when you were a kid.
Well, yeah, the original Dungeons and Dragons was really coming from a place of, I've read Dying Earth and I've read, you know,
Three
Middle
Hearts
Earth,
and Three
and I've
Lions.
Read anything with Earth in it.
Yeah.
And I want to play it with that kind of theme.
Yeah.
But because it got so established for so long, by the time you hit 3rd Ed, it was really, no one's coming to this to play those. They're coming to this to play as D&D.
Yeah, they want the D&D experience. I mean, we're D&D.
Oh, yeah,
and
you got to pay more for the D&D experience.
Oh, that's right. That lasts like a weekend. It's got a towel wash. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Mm, some deep tissue stuff.
Real deep tissue.
Unexpectedly deep. Okay, yeah, like, the idea in this edition was to streamline it back down to the class fantasy, to put characters back in dungeons, to put paladins back to being front and center, and to quash a lot of the complaints that 4th edition generated, that the character classes and the races that were available in the game might have been a little too out there for some folks. When you were like, what are you? I'm a shard mind wildblade.
What do you do? I'm a big crystal, and also I'm psychic, and I wield a psychic sword, and I jump around, and you're like, what the fuck is this? Isn't D&D?
The problem,
where's my elf and dwarf?
Yeah, the problem, of course, is that all the shit that represented D&D back in the 70s is still in every edition.
Yeah.
You want an elf? There's an elf. There you go. You want an elf fighter? There's an elf fighter. It's fine. We just added some more crap. And then the more crap is what gets people angry. So a lot of the 5th edition design tenets seem to have been to try and streamline and to try and simplify and to try and make it so that people can pretend they can play the game without a grid.
Yeah, which you can't.
You're supposed to play with a grid, but there's people want to be like, yeah, this is perfect for Theater of the Mind. It's awesome.
I mean, I know everything is in a 5-foot dimension, and it tells you things and degrees based on that, and all your powers are based on it, and there's so many positional things that you can do, but don't worry.
We got rid of flanking, so it's completely Theater of the Mind.
Hey, what is that, sentry ability? Oh, you don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, Sentinel.
Oh, yeah, the Sentinel.
Because we're currently playing in a friend's D&D game, and my character class has Sentinel. So when he was like, we'll just play Theater of the Minds, guys, I was like, no, we won't, because this doesn't do anything if it's not Theater of the Mind.
Yeah, if you just say, the guy goes around, and he's on the other side of the person you're trying to protect, and I just have to take your word for it.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that Sentinel works when you're in the mood for it to work? Great, thanks.
Woo.
What a power.
Power back in the hands of the DM, baby!
Or we could play the game the way it was actually intended and not the way we're pretending it was.
The way God and Gygax intended.
Yeah. I almost rankled a little bit when he was like, all right, fine, but we're using the hex grid because I like those. And I was like, you just removed two of my vectors of attack for Sentinel feet. Put them back.
Don't you dare.
Okay, well, yeah, so the basic concept behind the game was to make it easier to get into and play, to alleviate people's concerns that character creation took a long time and that every character class had turned into the complicated character class. And they fixed that by turning every character class into the morons character class. Not really. I mean, it's not that bad. I'm just being vitriolic for no good reason.
At level one, you have no choices.
Level one in this game is dumb.
Actually, pick your race and class, and then you're done.
You know what? I will go ahead and say that that's a mechanical complaint I have in this game. The fact that they gated feats behind whether or not you want your stat level ups.
That is one of the few complaints that I have. Feats in this game became, instead of just something that minorly tweaks a thing you do, like, oh, now I get a +1 if I'm doing this specific action.
Mm-hmm.
They became things that actually give you some large mechanical benefit.
Eh, most of them. Some of them are still like, you get +2 to 2 skills.
Well, most of them are
proficiency. You can speak an extra language.
And those ones are also more than one extra language. I'm just saying, the ones like that are like, I don't know why you're picking this, but
they've always been in there. I'm not accusing 5th edition of specifically of doing that. Every edition that's had has had a feat that's like, you're a good teacher, maybe. Get +2 to that skill.
But at least now it's like, yeah, and you get +1 to your intelligence, and also you get this. Like, they threw in a lot of actual material benefits to some of the dumber feats you would have seen,
and then hardline gated access to them,
you know, because you need a 13 and a stat to get it, maybe.
What? No, I'm talking about 5th edition, where you have to choose if you want a feat between.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
I thought you meant like if you could pick them.
No, I meant what I was talking about was the fact that in 5th edition, that the big change here is that the feats are optional. Yeah. They pushed them back to optional, which I think they were in 3rd edition as well when it was first published.
That was the entire point
of
the fighter.
You'd think that. Well, look at 2nd edition. In 2nd edition, literally everything outside of stat rolling was optional. In 5th edition, they introduced the concept of the ASI, or the ability score increase, that happens every couple of levels, right? And they had that already in 4th and 3rd edition. Occasionally, your ability scores would go up. It was a way to kind of show constant growth of your character. In 5th edition, that was retained. You get to add +1 to 2 different attributes, or you can
+2 to 1 attribute.
Or +2 to 1 attribute. Or you can forego that and get a feat.
Which, for, you know, basically everyone, is the feat section of this book might as well not exist until level 12.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless you were doing the 4d6 drop low method of generating a character,
yeah,
and managed to get yourself a 17 or 18 on there, you are for sure getting to 20, because they put a cap on your stats at 20.
Yeah.
You're going to get to 20 in your main stat first before you do anything else, because it's
otherwise
the way you can
up.
Always benefit.
Yeah. You need that bonus. Because otherwise you're giving up, not accuracy, but like, you know.
I mean, Pretty much.
Yes, accuracy. Sorry. Okay, so there you go. So, basics of the game. Super basics of the game, because we didn't do that yet. It's Dungeons & Dragons. You have stats. They range from 3 to 18.
Man, if you're listening to this and you don't know what Dungeons & Dragons is at this point, what the fuck are you even doing here?
I know. I'm just... In this game, they really push the array. They don't really want you to roll them dice. They want you to...
No, man. The first thing they say is roll 4d6, drop low.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking more about the cultural aspects of the game. The array is almost completely assumed.
Yeah, well, that's for any actual play that you would do.
Yeah.
The reason they needed to put 4d6 drop low as the very first thing that you should do is because this game is very much trying to appeal to the rose-tinted glasses nostalgia of D&D.
Yeah, and a huge part of that is remembering that time that you rolled an 18 right in front of everybody.
Yeah, so rolling for stats is back, whereas in 4th ed, they were like, that doesn't exist, fuck you.
Yeah, don't do that.
Like, please don't do that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that you remember about, like, oh, we're going to go ahead and give the wizard back their weird giant spell list, and we're going to go back to vague wording so you can argue about what it actually does.
Yeah. Oh, and then if the wording isn't vague enough, we'll go on Twitter and make more vague tweets about the same thing in the game several times, contradicting ourselves.
Yay. Yeah, we're not going to put out official errata. That's silly. Instead, we'll just go on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have followed us and seen the tweet in order to get your errata for this
edition. Or else someone at the table will tell you, well, actually, Crawford tweeted about this. And the tweet he put out was vague and weird and kind of worked both directions.
But so I think you'll see from my point of view.
Yeah. Okay. So what are the races that we start with this game off with? The species that you can choose from. This is one of the things that people like to say about 5th edition is it kind of did its best to scour 4th edition out of the line. They're like, whoops, let's just put a blanket on that. But of the few things that are left over from 4th edition, you'll find them primarily in species and class choices.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dragonborn stayed in there as a core primary
species.
As did
Tiefling.
And Tiefling, both in the starter book.
Yeah.
Azamar, I'm sorry, what was it? It's Eladrin is the other one that was in
still in there.
It's still in there, but it's like an elf subrace now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of it being its own thing.
Which is fine.
No, it's fine.
You don't need to have two different elves.
Also, the 4th edition Tiefling seems to have become the official Tiefling. Because 3rd edition and 2nd, Tiefling was basically a sexy lady with horns. little tiny horns, like costume horns.
Yeah, and then when you went into stealth, you'd go, like a shadow I am.
Uh-huh.
And then your talking skull would tell you that he didn't know anything. And
uh-huh. Yeah. And then you'd just keep playing through your life over and over again until you have 18s and all your stats, and then you'd talk to Dacon.
What up, Dacon?
In 4th edition, Tieflings turned into basically devil Klingons. They got them big old forehead horn ridges and some cool tails and everything, and like purple skin, and that stuff has been retained.
Yeah.
And then, so the base races in this game are human, variant human, dwarf, elf, gnome, halfling, tiefling, dragonborn.
Yeah. Now, the book starts with human, dwarf, elf, and halfling, and then goes, and the rest of these are optional.
Yeah, optional race. They're called the monstrous or sub-races.
Ugh. And the parts for the original four there have Jeff's favorite thing in a White Wolf game where they all have opinions about everyone else.
Unfortunately, the opinions they have about each other are mostly pretty tame. There's no super smugness. It's always like the hardest anyone thinks about anyone else is what dwarves think about elves. And they're just like, you can't trust an elf unless you like that elf and then you can trust them. It's like, all right, well, I guess you thought it through.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. What do humans think about halflings? Halflings are great chefs.
Halflings, good food.
I like them.
As long as you don't bump your head on the ceilings.
Wait, hold on. Are we talking the hairy foot lazy ones or like the little dinosaur ride dreadlock ones?
Oh, we're not in that setting.
I don't know. Or like maybe just the dreadlock ones where they're like weirdly skinny and muscular and they look like drawings of cherubs from the 1600s.
Yeah, we're not in that one either.
Okay, are we back to fat and lazies?
You goddamn right we are.
Okay, all right.
Any picture of a halfling in the D&D 5th ed player's handbook is going to be a chunky, Bigfoot, hairy foot man with like a smile on his face and rosy cheeks.
They give him smiles that are terrifying, though.
It's true.
The art direction on halflings in 5th edition is like, whoa, you fucked up. Every one of them looks like he's like a Chucky doll. Like a little fat Chucky doll.
Little fat Chucky.
Yeah, so all the four the base races, which I guess is a thing that can throw back to OD&D, like literally like the red box.
I mean, it's...
Because gnomes have been in there since first edition, and so have half-orcs. So the idea of pushing them back to the, oh, these guys are optional, they don't count, is like, this isn't the nostalgia you're looking for.
Oh, it is. For
second edition.
The people who are coming to this going like, oh, fourth ed added so many weird, dumb things. Why can't we just have standard Tolkien races?
I guess that's true. Although, the gnome, the half-orc, and the half elf aren't things that were added by fourth edition. All of these races have been floating around.
No, I didn't say because they were mad at fourth edition.
It's mouthfeel. It's all mouthfeel. So anyway, the other races are the gnome, the half elf, the half orc, and the dragonborn. You know, the basics. You know all these races. And then the classes are what? During the development, they were promising that every class ever from Dungeons & Dragons was going to be a 5th edition D&D class.
Yeah,
It was in their development notes. They were like, hey, we're going to, if you've heard of a class, it's going in here. And everyone was like, no, it isn't. The book will be too big. But maybe you'll get it in like a couple of books.
Yeah.
And the idea of a second player's handbook is a pipe dream.
No. At this point, there's no way they would, because so many of the classes you've heard of are just choices you make at level 3 for the various other bases.
Yes, and some of them still aren't really there. Like the Warlord, which is just something that Mike Merles, one of the designers on this game, never cared for, is just gone. People keep saying that it's basically the battle commander type or whatever it is, archetype in the fighter. It is not. It is a paltry imitation.
Yeah.
But here's what they left you with. Bard, Barbarian, Cleric, Fighter, Druid, Wizard, Rogue, Ranger, Paladin, Sorcerer, Warlock.
There you
Monk.
Go. Yeah.
And he got like 11 classes. There's plenty of them. They're doing fine there. There are some things that are pointedly missing from previous editions that people might have. The big one just being Warlord.
Yeah.
Warlord, honestly, was my favorite thing ever in Dungeons & Dragons.
It's true. It was a very good addition and added something that I think was great, and then they took it away because Mike Merles is a horrible person, and I hear that he kills puppies for fun.
Yeah, I've heard that he can't have an orgasm unless he kills a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've also heard he's never had an orgasm, so dogs are mostly safe.
Yeah, dogs are mostly safe because he has weird pillowy hands.
Mm-hmm.
If he tries to strangle a dog, it mostly just falls asleep.
It's like, oh, I'm being squished by pillows.
Oh, yeah. How comfortable.
Mm-hmm. So, the classes.
Now, most of the classes are... I mean, like we said, your first couple levels are just nothing. Everyone, levels 1 and 2 is just like, here's your class. You do this, make a choice. Here's level 2. Here's one thing you add on to it.
There's a lot of dead levels, which I think they were trying to avoid. So there's occasionally they'll be like, oh, level 4 is either an ASI or a feat.
Yeah.
For
so
everybody.
Every 4 levels for every class is the ASI/feat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem with that, and this is going to go into one of my biggest complaints about 5th edition,
sure,
is it really discouraged multiclassing.
Yes.
The fact that every single class tracks its own ASI within class levels rather than player levels means that it's not just every 4 levels you get the ability score or feat, it's every 4 levels of a class. So if you want to dip, let's say, 2 or 3 into some class to get something, you're almost forced to go to that 4th level because otherwise you're just leaving power on the table without getting it.
Yeah. So you'll recall that in the transition from 2nd to 3rd edition, they introduced the base attack bonus, which was just a scaling level of how likely you are. It was like an accuracy bonus. But it came with a benefit that every 5 points of 2 hit granted you another swing in combat as long as you held still. It was called a full attack. 4th edition got rid of that and replaced it with its own whole system. 5th edition brings back half of the base attack bonus system in the form of the extra attacks. So if you stick with a class, like a martial class, for 5 levels, you get another attack.
And again, it's tied to the class
and not to the character
martial.
Right.
So if I'm like a level 3 paladin, level 2 fighter, I don't have a second attack yet, even though I've got five levels of dudes that get extra attacks.
Yeah, whereas if you were a third level paladin, second level fighter in third edition multiclassing system, you would have another attack because you would have gotten to +5/+1 because your base attack bonus went up once every level.
Yeah, it's just another way that the edition really wants you to stay with one thing. And mm-hmm. I don't know why that is. I mean, maybe they were just like, we don't feel like trying to balance out a mm-hmm. whole bunch of different stuff because we're very lazy.
Well,
but,
there, I mean, it's easy to lob accusations at this edition that it's basically
and
just,
I will.
That it's just a placeholder. That the edition, the fifth edition, literally exists to protect the Dungeons and Dragons license, which is why there's like four people working on it and no one ever releases anything for it but Adventures.
It's true.
But I'm sure that's not true because they spend a lot of money on it.
Sure.
So I don't know.
The reason they spend a lot of money on it is because fucking like actual plays on YouTube got huge, so
yeah, and most of them are using D&D, and D&D is one of the few, to their credit, one of the few role-playing games out there with the clout and the interest in supporting that market, and
that anyone has heard of that isn't into role-playing.
Well, what I'm getting at is that, like, say for example, on our own network, there's the Neo Scum podcast, which uses Shadowrun. Like, FOSS is not falling over themselves to sponsor AP podcasts running Shadowrun.
Well, yeah, but they don't have
resources.
Big Papa Hasbro behind them.
So there's been a little support for a couple of, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's an official Pathfinder podcast out there that gets support from Paizo.
Yeah.
And I think there's also one that does Pinnacle games, like Savage World stuff, that gets support from Pinnacle. But mostly D&D has become a big supporter of the podcast industry because they're making a lot of money out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that. Sorry for the digression. The thing that John's talking about earlier about multiclassing has created kind of a culture and role in leveling in this game where you don't multiclass. You don't make a fighter wizard. You dip.
Yeah. Now, if you do dip, it's usually maybe one level.
Sometimes
and
two.
And you have to do it later in the career.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the most part, as a low-level character, and because most D&D games are fairly low level.
Yeah.
Like, I think there was some survey they did, and most never really get beyond, like, level 9.
Yep. That's one of the, like I was saying, I want to throw credit to this game where it's due. The fact that they pushed the class alternating, they took things like Prestige and Paragon and pushed that down to level 3, smart.
But it also means there's almost no reason for you to even dip into something else, because you need to hit at least level 4
mm-hmm.
If you're any class, 5 if you're a marshal so you can get the extra, and then at that point, you can look at something else.
Yeah, you consider a dip, and usually the dips are obvious. There are a couple subclasses that are really, really good choices for various reasons. Like, for example, Warlock dip is super popular for charisma-based classes because it gives you the ability to hit everything with charisma for the rest of the game.
Well, you get your better cantrip and a few little extra bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need to go heavy into Warlock to get anything you really want.
Bear Barbarian is another one that sees a lot of people taking a 2-level dip.
Well, you'd have to be 3.
Oh, is it? Yeah, okay. 3 to get
a
Bear
Barbarian.
Because it's
your level 3 when you choose your totem.
But basically, it kind of shows the cracks where the classes have these subclasses built into them that just aren't even remotely close to each other in terms of balance.
No.
There's always a best one.
And, man, there are some that just have better, like, level 1s mm-hmm. and 2s than other things. I mean, dipping 1 or 2 levels into fighter
that's
is
a really
amazing.
Good one. Yeah, because it gets your weapon skill choice.
And you get an action surge.
Yeah.
So an entire extra action.
Yeah, because fighters choose a combat style at level 2, and they get their action surge.
Level 2 is action surge.
Okay, so level 1, they choose their combat style, which is like, oh, I get a bonus to sword and shield fighting, or to 2-weapon fighting, or something like that.
Yeah.
And then they get an action surge at level 2, and you don't really need to go to level 3 for fighter, because almost all the subclasses are just trash.
Well, you'd go to 3 because you're going to get the one subclass
that
anyone
isn't.
Plays.
Yeah, Battle Cat Master.
Battle Master.
Yeah, the one that anyone actually bothers with. I mean, Arcane Arcane Eldritch Knight
is hot garbage.
Well, it depends on if you're going to cheese it or not, because you can set it up using the fact that the familiar list in this game also only has one choice out of 12 to go, oh, it's an owl. That way I get advantage on every attack for the rest of the game.
Yeah. It's familiars in this game, you have a choice of a bunch of different ones, but unlike other additions where it's like, oh, I picked a toad because it gave me constitution, or I picked a cat because it gave me dexterity or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just all of them do the exact same thing, except the only one you're going to pick is an owl because it has flyby attack. Your familiars can't actually attack, but what it can do is fly up to someone, do the help action, and then fly away without getting murdered because all familiars have like 2 hit points.
Yeah, and the flyby attack makes it so that they don't suffer attacks of opportunity for flying away, so they fly in 25 feet, help you, and then fly away again, and then you get advantage on that attack.
Yeah, so what it is you get an advantaged attack every turn by having a familiar, and that's about it.
Yeah, it's not completely worth it or anything, but it's a thing you can do.
Yeah.
So, anyway, these classes, these subclasses are a mixed bag. Some of them are really cool and interesting, usually one, maybe two per class, and then other ones are just hot garbage that you shouldn't bother with or even talk about. Like, yeah. If you found yourself making a four elements monk, whoops, you messed up.
And I mean, if you started making a monk, oops, you messed up.
Monks can be fun, but four elements monk, oops. And the problem is, unlike the previous editions, since there's nothing new coming, they're never going to fix the four elements monk. It's just going to be a wasted page in the book.
Well, it's the same thing with the ranger in the book.
Yeah.
Pretty much the base ranger and the base monk are both awful.
Yeah.
You have to get the versions of monk and ranger that are outside the main book in order to find something decent. And even then, like, the ranger gets okay. The best version of the monk is still kind of bad.
The poor story of the ranger in 5th edition, where it came out aggressively lackluster. They released a fix for it on the internet. That lasted a few weeks, and people were really enjoying it. And then they tweeted, like, we'll never put that in a book. Oh, don't even try. No. Well, it's the original ranger or nothing, because we're all about feels this edition.
Yeah. There's some problems with a few of the classes as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, I mean, really it is, again, a thing where they don't want you to multi-class, because a lot of them have things that are like, oh, here are your really super cool powers, but you have to be like level 18 or 20 in that class to get it.
Yeah, the capstones in this game are it's like they understood full well that the average play experience pretty much ends around level 9 or 10. And then they still went and put ridiculous capstones in at level 20 that people are always talking about like they're relevant.
Yeah, they're like, oh, man, if you're a level 20 barbarian, you could... Whoa, let me stop you right there. That doesn't happen.
No one's a level 20 barbarian.
No one's a level 20 anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, realistically, people pretty much stop playing the game at a certain level, or they make new characters, or they start a new campaign. So these capstones, while cool, shouldn't be treated as the thing that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, if you're only going up to level 9, if you've already gone 5 levels in some class, you may as well just keep going in that class, because you're only going to be in there for another few levels.
Yeah.
Like, the very anti-multiclassing feel of this game is probably one of the things that annoys me the most about it.
Sure. I mean, that's a holdover from the last edition as well, because you remember how multiclassing worked in 4th edition, right? You could take a series of 3 feats at levels 3, 5, and 7 that gave you bonuses that were similar to another class's, or you could take the hybrid class option from the third player's handbook that no one knows how it worked.
Yeah.
So, multiclassing has just always been a land of contrasts. In summation, I hope you enjoyed hearing about multiclassing.
Welcome to my TED Talk.
Okay, so I won 3 and 7, I think was that. But anyway, sorry.
Doesn't matter.
Nothing matters. I wanted to talk about a few things in this edition that I actually did really enjoy. The first one's advantage.
Yep.
Advantage is basically a power from one of the classes in 4th edition stolen and given to everybody.
Yep.
It's if you have advantage, you roll 2d20 to hit and you take the higher roll. If you have disadvantage, you roll 2d20 to hit and you take the lower roll.
If you have both, no matter how many variations of both of them you have, like, it doesn't matter if you have 4 instances of advantage and 1 instance of disadvantage, if you have both of them, you just roll a d20 and that's it.
I do kind of wish that it did work the other way. If you got, like, I have 7 advantage and 3 disadvantage, I have to roll 8 dice and take the middlest 3.
The middlest 3. And then roll those 3 dice,
yeah,
and then take the middle of those.
That's that sounds good. So the idea behind Advantage was great. It was basically, hey, one of the biggest complaints, one of the most viable complaints about 4th edition D&D is that combat's slow. Why is combat slow? Because there's a whole bunch of shit floating around on the table. Everyone's constantly buffing and debuffing.
Everyone's constantly pooping on the
table.
Everyone's
just pooping on the table. It was a real problem in the 4th edition years.
Yeah, everyone mentions things like WoW for babies or
like
too
MMOs.
Many combat options.
Ugh.
But nobody mentions the fact that everybody was defecating on the table.
The constant pooping was way more important than the weeaboo fighting magic.
Oh, yeah. You'd be like, all right, my rogue's going to move forward 20 feet. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So what I was going to say is the idea behind advantage is and disadvantage is there's too many fiddly bonuses floating around in the game. So if we just say most of the fiddly bonuses now grant advantage or disadvantage, and also you can give out advantage or disadvantage as the DM for arbitrary reasons, like, oh, you have the high ground, you get advantage, that kind of thing, then we can super simplify and streamline play.
Yeah.
And it, for the most part, really works. It's an easy mechanic to keep your head around. The downside is that a lot of builds in the game now are focused around finding perma-advantage.
Eh.
It's not a real downside. I mean, I note that that's a thing that I see people talking about online. Like, how do you get full advantage all the time? It's super important.
Oh, you be a barbarian.
Yeah.
Then you just reckless strike everything and it doesn't matter.
Now, the other problem is that that was an early design decision in 5th edition D&D. And unfortunately, during the later design editions, the fiddly bonuses crept back in as well.
Yeah.
There's not as many. Let's real credit here. There's not nearly as many as there have been in previous editions.
No.
But they're still there.
Yeah, the bonuses and fiddly things are still around,
mm-hmm,
but it's less integral to most people's play. Like, in past editions, like, basically 3rd and 4th at least, there were a lot of instances of, like, well, I can do this, and that's going to give me a +1, and then I've got a sword for a 3, and then I do this, and my advantage on this attack because I'm flanking gives me 2. And you don't have to quite math as hard.
Yeah, you don't see the flanking conga lines in 5th edition because there's no benefit to them. And since weapons, you have a proficiency bonus, which is actually going to be my number 2 thing I really like about this game. Instead of a fiddly, what's my plus to hit with this specific type of sword type of situation, your base bonus is pretty simple to calculate as well. There are classes, though, that just throw an extra dice at the problem. Like, every cleric is going to take Bless. And what does Bless do? It adds a D4 to that roll. So now you're rolling, if you have advantage, 2d20, take highest, and a D4.
Yeah.
So there are still some fiddly bonuses floating around out there.
Yeah. I like the idea of turning bonuses into dice, though.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's just more fun to roll dice than it is to calculate out what your math total is.
It is true. It's nice to have that extra layer of randomness in there so you're not just constantly running math numbers.
Yeah. And it's a thing where at least then you're like, oh, I'm interacting with the game rather than I make a notation on my sheet of what my math is.
Mm-hmm. Or worse, I have to constantly keep track of what everyone else at the table is doing so I can remind them that I gave them a buff.
Yeah. This, you can just hand everyone a D4 and go, here's your bless.
Mm-hmm. It'll last till when I say it doesn't.
Yeah. And then when it doesn't, I say, give me my D4s back,
you're no longer blessed.
D4s.
So that's smart. I like that. The next thing about this game I particularly enjoyed was, like I mentioned earlier, the fact that it's got bounded accuracy. There's a proficiency bonus in the game. Yeah, I believe it starts at +2.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's your chance to hit with any old weapon. You add a +2 to it. It's your proficiency bonus.
Well, proficiency
is... It does a lot of stuff.
Anything that you are proficient with gets the proficiency bonus.
Yes.
So before where... If you said, like, oh, my fighter has proficiency with a longsword. In other editions, it just meant I can use a longsword without a penalty.
Yeah, and also you had access, like in 4th edition, because all the weapons had accuracy bonuses on them, it unlocked that accuracy bonus.
Yeah. Now it's just anything that you have with proficiency in, you get the proficiency bonus, and that scales in... player level, at least, is one of the very few things that scales at.
Yes, and it starts at +2 and it ends at +6. So there's a bit of a math flattening here, which honestly was very much needed.
Yeah.
Fourth edition, one of the big problems of 4th edition is you'd be like, what's the AC on that Elder Dragon? Oh, 54. But don't worry, it's because you're +35 to hit.
Yeah. But now you can still have things like, what's this? Oh, it's a swarm of goblins, and they're not amazing to hit, but your AC never really climbs to, like, the, my AC is a 47.
Yeah, it's really, really hard to get it above, like, a 23.
Yeah.
And even that's really hard. It's you basically have to be getting piled on with magic stuff to get that high up.
But the fact that proficiency is used for everything, for your to hit, for your skill bonuses, for your saves.
Yeah.
Proficiency is just a catch-all number that when you hit the level requirement for it to go up, anything that has a little dot saying you're proficient in it, it goes up that one.
I also appreciate that it is not tied to any of the character stats.
No.
So that means you don't have to have a maximum stat in your maximum thing to alter your proficiency bonus. That said, you do still need to have a maximum stat in your primary thing to alter all your other bonuses. So,
and skills do still use the ability modifier for what it is. So even if I am proficient in something, if my skill is a +0, I'm going to have whatever the proficiency is. If someone else has a modifier of +3, they're going to have proficiency +3.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're trying to do something specific, you still kind of need to have the stats for it.
Yeah.
But at least the bonuses scale on whatever you do, and you don't have to worry about, like, am I putting skill ranks in something? How many skill ranks am I putting in here?
So making a character in this edition is just ludicrously easy, because there's all these, like, simplified things for it. But it's kind of like you pay for that easiness with boring.
Yeah, because making a character is basically like, pick a race, pick a class, pick one of these two options.
Pick a big television.
And now you're done.
Yeah.
You go in, you're like, oh, I'm a this guy. Cool. Pick whatever your base option is, and I guess pick one of these four skills to be proficient in and go to town.
I mean, history has shown us that people should not play first edition D&D or first level D&D characters. It's been start at
and
third
yet
level
for everyone message just going like, I only like to play first level D&D. I think that's the true experience.
Have we gotten that message?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, all right.
Every edition of D&D, we talk about how levels 1 through 3 are basically in the trash and worthless.
Yeah, and then we get someone who's, okay, I guess I just haven't seen that. I'm not reading your comments.
I don't care what your opinion is.
Actually, that's not true. I read all of them, and I get obsessive about them.
I know,
and anytime I get any complaint at all, I immediately blow it up into 15 complaints.
Exactly. The one person is like, well, I think this, and Jeff will come up to me and be like, oh, God, the entire internet hates us!
Well, my feeling is that if one person complains out of our 13 or 14,000 listeners, that just means there's several thousand that didn't complain but still felt that way.
I know you think that, and it's not true.
Fair enough. So, you got anything else about this game, this edition that you liked better than other things or didn't like? I think we're just doing this in this episode piecemeal.
Oh, it's loosey-goosey. This is a 150 episode. I don't need to get into structure.
Yeah, no, we're not doing a structure. So, anything you feel like talking about?
So, the other thing I do want to mention when it comes to the characters in this is that you still have sort of a weird thing with spell casting.
They kind of move spell casting back an edition instead of forward an edition.
Yeah, because for everyone else, they hard streamlined. So if you pick any martial class, your first levels are just like, pick one of these two things, then you just get this thing. You have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
And then level 3, you get to pick from one of 3 subclasses. And then you get this. You have no choice.
Yeah.
So spellcasters are the only ones who really get to go in and go, all right, what are the choices I actually have? And I have a giant spell list that I can pick from.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, there's so many things that, because this edition was worried about feels, that they kind of just made it so you even there don't have a lot of options.
Well,
let's take third level spells, fireball versus anything else you could do.
Right, sure.
Fireball is, of course, one of the classic iconic spells for D&D.
Oh, it absolutely is.
I mean, everyone's got some story about fireballing whatever, or accidentally catching their friend in a fireball, or they fireballed and blew up an entire thing of enemies, or whatever.
And if you're in one of the early editions, it's all that stuff about how you have to calculate its resonating bounce off the dungeon walls and hitting the monsters again.
And So they were like, okay, we're going to make Fireball one of those things that's like, ooh, yeah, this is supposed to be super cool when you get it at level 3 because it's a signature type spell for our game. But they went so far with it that it's just better than not only any attack spell you would have gotten at level 3, but like for a while after that, it remains the best attack spell you can get.
Yeah.
And for the most part, you'd look at things and go, oh, I could cast like a level 6 attack spell or just upcast my Fireball as a level 6 spell and it's going to be better than the level 6 attack spell, so fuck it.
Yeah. So when it comes to the spells, one of the things I would bring up as a complaint about this edition is kind of a backpedaling. In 4th edition, you'd see most spells and abilities that wizards and sorcerers and what have you could do were kind of just, oh, this is a damage effect or a stun effect or whatever, and it works the following way, and here's the math. And here's a one-sentence description of what it does. And sometimes it feels a little counterproductive. I'll give it 4th edition this detriment. Sometimes the descriptions are like, oh, I open up a portal to hell and hurl the monster through it, and he gets bitten by 1,000 red teeth, and he comes out the other side, and he takes 8 damage.
Yeah.
You're like, that doesn't seem to fit the... So I've seen complaints both ways against 4th edition, that it's overly descriptive for what those things do, and people have to shout the names of the powers when they're using them, using usually fighters come and get it as an example, where it's like, oh, you managed to suck everyone in like a little vacuum cleaner, and they're like, how would you do that? That doesn't make any sense, versus they are under-descriptive and you can't roleplay with them because there's just too much math in there and not enough descriptive text. I have seen both those complaints. In 5th edition, it swung hard in the too much description direction.
Huh.
And you end up with things that don't make any fucking sense because of the descriptions. Like, just take the friend spell, for example.
Yes.
The friend spell, when cast, makes someone, like, you know, friendly towards you for a while. When it's over, they automatically hate you.
Yeah. Even if you're like, oh, I cast friends, and then I, like, had us go into a mutually beneficial deal, or mm-hmm. I cast friends, and then I bought them a drink and gave them a free lunch and then left. When the spell ends, regardless of what happened, they're like, I hate you.
Which means now the spell does something different. It's actually a make people hate you spell, because that part has no saving throw attached to it or anything. It's just random descriptive bullshit. So if you want, if you can come up with a situation in which having people hate you would be beneficial, congratulations, there's a first level spell for that.
I mean, it's a cantrip for that.
Oh, sorry.
You can just do that at will if you want to.
Yeah, you can do it all fucking day. All you need to do is invent a machine that's powered by people that hate you. And and because they left that in there as a description, kind of, oh, fiddle-dee-dee type, like, thought or idea writer, it doesn't have any rules associated with it or sense attached to it.
I'm pretty sure that's us, the engine that's fueled by people that hate.
It's true. It's what keeps us happy. Keep trying to stop us. Keep trying to find our show, but nice. I dare you. It's called Character Creation Cast, by the way.
Man.
You're welcome for the plug.
So, yeah, the spells got a little weird in that, but the thing I was mentioning was mostly that there's not a lot of choice, because you'll look at, say, first level spells, and you know, there are some winners, but there are a lot of losers,
mm-hmm.
especially when you look at attack spells, for instance.
Yes.
Attack spells in any given level, you almost always have one that's better, because it'll be like, what is this? Oh, these are all single target attacks.
Mm-hmm.
This one does a D10, and these three do a D8. All right. I guess I take the D10.
Well, you have to factor into account that they're different types of damage, so they might damage monsters that have a resistance or a vulnerability. And then you flip through the DMG, and you're like, whoop, nope.
Yeah,
they forgot to do that interaction.
Nothing has that, except for, like, poison and psychic a little bit for things that are, like, inanimate objects.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been a problem in a lot of editions, is they introduced this concept of, like, Pokemon-style elemental...
Oh, yeah, they're like, ooh, this does acid damage, and it's a D8 instead of a D10, but the D10 is fire, and that's more easily resisted. And I go, not really. There's, like, two things in the DMG with fire resist.
Don't make me research my spells by edge cases.
Yeah...
If you're going to do this Pokemon shit, you need to commit to it and make most monsters have a couple of vulnerabilities and a couple of strengths.
I mean, that would be interesting, but for the most part, whatever damage you decide you want to do, it doesn't matter.
No, especially because this game doesn't have the feat chain support to be like, oh, I'm primarily a lightning wizard because I picked a bunch of feats that do stuff with lightning.
I mean, There's just one feat you would get, and it's the I'm the whatever element wizard. I ignore resistance to it.
Yeah.
I picked a feat, and now I don't give a shit.
Yeah, which honestly just means that you're playing less game now.
Yeah,
I
you don't have to worry about it. I picked the feat that lets me not worry.
Mm-hmm. So,
but again, at third level, you got your fireball, and it makes lightning bolt seem like hot garbage, and everything else you can do just bad.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing, most of the classes in this game have a way to access some of the spell list a little bit. Like, even monks, if you pick the bad one, gets access to some of the spells. It's like barbarians that don't.
Pretty much your martial classes don't.
Fighters get Eldritch Knight, paladins get cleric spells, rangers get cleric spells. It's pretty much barbarian that don't.
I mean, that have zero option to, yeah.
Yes.
Although, well, even then, I'm sure there's a subclass that's like, you can cast this.
There might be one, but I don't know what it is. But what I was trying to get at by that point was that in third edition, one of the complaints I always had about it was that three quarters of any given book was taken up by a spell list for two of the classes.
And now it's taken up by a spell list for four of the classes.
It's for most of the classes now, I guess.
Well, I mean, the things you get for anyone that isn't a full caster is like, you're going to have like two spells, my dude. It does not matter.
Yeah. I'll say this isn't a player's handbook thing, but one of the complaints I routinely see about 5th edition that I have experienced myself is that the streamlining of the monsters down to just what's the kobold entry? A kobold is a bit of a weak point. Because in previous editions, they'd be like, here's five kinds of kobold, and you could use them together in one encounter to create kind of an interesting and varied fight.
Here's a kobold shaman, and here's a kobold trickster.
Here's the kobold worm priest.
You know, here you go.
Yeah. So that's kind of a missing thing. And it's okay, though, because this is not an edition that wants you to create craft your own encounters. They want you to buy them fancy hardback modules.
Yeah, I mean, you look at a lot of the stuff in there, and I think the spells is just a symptom for me of the books having a lot of things where the choices seem very simple. I mean, you look at Ranger and you go like, hey, did you want to choose to be a Beastmaster? No, I didn't. It's the worst thing in the game. Why would I do that?
Second worst. Four Elements Monk.
Four Elements Monk and Beastmaster Ranger are having a wrestling match in the mud at the bottom of D&D.
Fair enough.
But, I mean, it's still just something where you look at it and you go, even if my, like, concept was this, I've known some people who are like, oh, yeah, I had a concept for a character and I wanted to do this, but it's so bad and there's so few options, like, because they stripped everything way down and took so many of the options away, it means you can't try and course correct for a bad subclass.
Yeah.
Like, you can't go, oh, I'm a Beastmaster Ranger, but I've taken all these feats that they put in a splat book to make it so that Beastmaster Ranger is viable.
Or I've dipped into some other class where if you add its one ability to Beastmaster Ranger, it starts to make sense a little bit, and here we go, and I fixed it. That stuff isn't really there.
Yeah, if something is bad in 5th edition, it is just bad, and there's not really anything you can do to fix it.
Not to name drop, but the system mastery of 5th edition is mostly just to pick the stuff that's good in the first place and then just ride that out.
Yeah, just find out, like, oh, pick a class, and then find out what of its three options are the good one, and then do that, and it's fine, because you don't have a lot of options, but the good one will be good all the way through.
Yeah, you won't have to worry about it. So, I don't know. I think we probably could get into our favorite and least favorite.
I mean, not that I have been talking about my favorite and least favorite thing this whole time.
But I know. It's true. We're gonna have to stick to the rules, John. There's rules in this country.
Are there?
No.
I mean,
have
you looked around?
Yeah, there used to be, but now there aren't, because no one will enforce them, and it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, what else is there to talk about in this edition?
I mean, there's some stuff if we didn't want to just talk about the player's handbook. I mean, one of the other complaints I have in this is CR doesn't fucking mean anything anymore.
Oh, no, it's
anymore.
Gone right back to the third edition version of CR, which is a worthless joke.
Yeah, it's, oh, my entire team can fight, like, a CR4 encounter, and it's fine, and no one gives a shit, but this CR2 one almost TPK'd them.
Because they didn't do any fucking research. They said they did, but it was all like, hey, guys, what's your favorite kind of monk? I don't care. We're not putting any of your shit in the book.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not in the main book, but for any of the DMs out there with the Monster Manual and the DMG, trying to make an encounter in 5th edition and really knowing whether or not this will straight up murder your players is very difficult.
Yeah, and just keep your eye on the fact that they turn Druid into the only class in the game that interacts with a CR mechanic by letting them shapeshift into things with CR as a capstone,
yeah,
which means you need to keep an eye on Druid players because they'll be like, oh, let me just go on the internet real quick. What's the best CR1 monster? That's me. Okay, done. And, I mean, you don't have to keep an eye on them because that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, because, you know, otherwise you're like, what CR1 thing did you pick? This dumb idiot monster that I looked at and it sucks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whoops, you could have picked this other one and been 5 times better in all capacity because CR1 means nothing.
Yeah. The other thing that I was going to mention is, ah, shit, now I forgot it. I was going to say something and the CR thing just totally fucked me up.
Oh, you were going to mention balloons! Motherfucking balloons! Was that it? Am I right?
No. Maybe it'll come back to me.
Okay, so yeah, there's plenty of these easily rendered minor complaints about the game. Ultimately, though, it is just a playable edition of D&D. It's fine.
Well, yeah, because they stripped it so far down, it's playable because it's very simple.
If there's one internet complaint about 5th edition that I'd really like to, or not complaint, but thing that's held up as a big positive about it that I would like to kind of address a little bit.
I'd like to shit all over it if I could, please.
Well, it's kind of, yeah. I mean, because, okay, one of the things I consistently see people saying in, like, forums on the AV Club and what have you when 5th edition comes up is, the reason I like 5th edition is when they took all those rules and shit out, it made it so good for role-playing. You could put so much role-playing in there now, because you don't know what's what, so you gotta role-play it.
Look, RPGs are a completely mercantilistic system where there's a percentage of what you can put in there, and the more rules, the less role-playing. So they took 20% of the rules out, so now we have 20% more role-playing.
This is always a bullshit argument. Role-playing is one of those ineffable quantities. It's like fucking love. You can't take it. All you can do is add role-playing to a thing. You can't, because that's all there is. You take the framework, and then you role-play with the framework as much or as little as you would like.
Yeah.
It works in no matter, Phoenix Command, the ruliest game that was ever written, you can still role play. You can still sit at a table and be like, I sure love Phoenix Command, and I like Phoenix Command, and even
I like commanding these Phoenixes.
I definitely have never read Phoenix Command.
Yeah, you can play the crunchiest game ever and have an entire session where all you do is talk and never roll a die,
mm-hmm,
because it's a role-playing game, and if you want to do that, you can do that. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter what the rules are, the amount of rules. The two things are not direct correlations. And I know we've said that before in various episodes of various things. I keep seeing it. I keep seeing it and seeing it, and I wanted to bring it up about this specific edition because, boy, do I ever see it a lot.
Boy, howdy.
Boy, howdy. So, John.
Howdy doody.
So, John, we had a couple of announcement masteries to get through this week.
Do we?
We do.
Even for the 150.
I don't feel like pushing either of them off. I think they're both connected to Kickstarters.
It'd
be kind of mean of us to do that to our.
Fine.
So
I was having a happy party where I got to talk about 5th edition and mostly bitch about it, but whatever.
You got money instead. Relax. Everything's fine.
Instead of fun, you have money.
This is how we pay our bills.
It's true.
So if you would like us to read things at John's apparent disgust, all you got to do is go on our on our website.
Let me just get on the table there.
We're not playing 4th ed.
Maybe you aren't.
Well, look over there. I own every 4th ed. I'm so big on 4th ed. You're making me so bad I want to poop on the table. I'm the biggest supporter of...
Turn to the frogs, gay!
Did you hear about him today?
No.
That he accidentally...
That he accidentally a Coca-Cola bottle?
No, that in his complaints that he was sending a bunch of, like, discovery notes to lawyers about the stuff he had sent to Sandy Hook people, and there was a bunch of child porn in it.
Ooh, wowzers. Great.
And then when he found out that was a thing that people were complaining about, he was like, all right, they're not going to take me down like this. You hear me, you little gang members? $1 million. That's all it would take for me to end your life. $1 million.
What?
He was basically saying that, like, if I find out who put child porn in the thing I emailed the lawyers, I'll pay $1 million to a made-up gang I know about, and they'll kill you.
Great.
It's, oh my God.
Fabulous.
His decline is so much more fun than his rise. But anyway, like I was saying, if you would like to get your stuff advertised on our show in some way, all you have to do is go to our System Mastery website, systemmasterypodcast.com, and pay us $50. You can find a button on the headboard called Give Us Some Money. You'll be able to follow through the links there. We will read your thing, provided it's like 2 minutes long or so, and we don't find it offensive in some way. It's just that simple.
It's so simple.
It's so simple.
It's
so
too simple. We need more hoops.
So this time we had a couple people send them in, and I'll do the first one, and I'll hand John the second. So here we goes. Here we goes indeed.
Here's Wheez goes. Also, just, I spats on you.
I'm going to do this entire one in Squiscar voice, I guess. All right, here we go. Have you ever listened to an actual play podcast and wished the players were more involved with game mechanics and design? Have you ever watched a play demo of a new game and wondered how it would play over the course of a campaign? Are you just plain sick of finished, polished, thoroughly tested games? I mean, I am, but that's because, you know, my chosen life.
I am the chosen one.
I made a mistake, and then I dragged John into it. Don't be like us. Sword of Symphonies is the tale of ex-pirate Cobb, the wanderer Tissa, and the ranger Penelope as they unravel the secrets of their melted continent and the mistakes of its disastrous past. It is also the story of super nerd Nick, sound sorceress Kathleen, and retro throwback Kirsten as they help their friend Kat playtest her new game in a very public venue. Give us a listen and tell us what you think, or download the game manual for free and play along with us. Kat gave us her word that you can try and seduce whoever you want. That's good. So you can't just only seduce the opposite sex. That's good to hear.
Hooray.
Yay. Check out Sword of Symphonies and more at peachgardengames.com.
Hooray.
There you go. So that's one. And then I'm going to have John do the other one.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to drag me into this?
I'm going to drag you into everything. Come with me to hell. John, it can't rain all the time.
Drag me to hell. Okay. You want me to do a voice for this one, or you want me to just do this straight up?
No, obviously I want you to do a voice for this.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, of course. If I could, I would like you to do it in the voice of Wacko Warner.
Wacko Warner?
Yeah, Yakko's kind of easy. Anyone can do a Yakko. Hey, how you doing? I can't do a Yakko.
Anyone can do Yakko, just like me. Yakko Warner!
I'll get you, Batman! No, Wacko's the one with the Liverpudlian accent. Yeah.
Lighter than dark by Washington Lulz.
Never mind, do it in your normal voice.
There you go.
I didn't understand any of that.
Lighter than dark by Washington Laws. In the far future, space travel is ordinary, and so is the life of Penelope James, a clerk living on an obscure little planet. What isn't ordinary is Penelope's friend, the Professor, an energetic scientist, or mad scientist, depending on who you ask, who won't take an uninteresting universe lying down. One day, the Professor explodes into Penelope's office with a new invention.
Okay.
A gas that is lighter than the dark matter that makes up most of the universe. When the Professor intends to build a hot air balloon to travel upwards in space and find the summit of space-time, Penelope decides that the idea is just impossible enough to be interesting.
You think it's the same Penelope?
Yeah, it's the same Penelope. Okay, every good. Penelope is the same Penelope.
Okay, good.
This is the Penelope from, like, Snidely Whiplash, right?
Yeah, it's the one who's tied to the train tracks.
Yeah, this is Penelope Pitstop from Wacky Races. It's all the same Penelope.
It's Penelope Pig, a character I am sure exists somewhere.
Yes. Accompanied by the Professor's long-suffering bodyguard, Selena Delgado, the three women travel upwards in the space-time continuum, encounter the strange marvels that hang over humanity's understanding of existence, and make their way to something that shouldn't exist, the top of the universe.
Oh, nice. Is that where the restaurant is?
Oh, yeah, the restaurant at the top of the universe. And then you can look down, and it kind of spins.
Yeah, it's great. It spins, so you have to, if you get sick, you have to be careful.
Yeah. You know, take one of the inner seats, not one of the outer seats.
Exactly. And if you can't do that, get one of those, like, behind-the-ear patches for traveling in the water.
Take your Dramamine
when you
go to the top of the universe.
I was trying to remember that name.
You're welcome. Lighter Than Dark is available as a paperback or ebook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at washlaws.com/lighterthandark. That's washlaws, exactly like it sounds, like you're going to take a law and put it in a bath.
Mm-hmm.
Washlaws.com/lighterthandark.
Yeah. Losh Law's Wash Law.
Bosh Law's Law Bob.
John, I lied to you. Neither of those was current Kickstarters. I just did all the work of getting them
petard!
Set up for this episode, and then I didn't want to do them again for 2 weeks from now. So that's what happened.
I did finally remember what I was going to talk about, though.
Oh, please do then.
The one last thing that they changed in this edition that is a big change.
Yeah.
And that is concentration spells.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's and that is actually a pretty good thing as well.
Yeah, it's another way of at least trying to rein in caster supremacy, because before, especially clerics, but also wizards, could do a buff train on something and just be like, all right, I'm going to fly and be invisible, and I'm going to be hasted, and I'm just going to go up to the ceiling and cast a bunch of spells, and no one can touch me.
Right.
But now, all of those are concentration spells, and you can only have one concentration spell at a time.
Yeah.
So if you want to be invisible, you have to concentrate on it. If you want to fly, you concentrate on that. And if you're casting a spell on someone else that's concentration, you can't just be like, oh, and I'll also do a thing for me.
Yeah, so concentration is a great hard limit on spellcasting buff power, which is a good idea.
Of course,
it requires
what that
you to
means
play more
is
thoughtfully.
You look at every spell list for a level and go, all right, I'm going to take one concentration spell, because if I take three, I'm never going to use all of them.
Yeah, that's true. You try and find ones that have a time, because there's still some that have durations and aren't concentration.
Yeah, you find ones that are like, what's this? Mage armor. It lasts 8 hours and isn't concentration. Cool.
It shouldn't be that. It should be a concentration spell, but whatever.
What's this? Hold person. It is concentration. All right, that's going to be my concentration spell for the level then.
Yeah, so anyway, it's not like it's perfect. It's just like we were saying with the advantage and disadvantage. It's a great idea that they didn't completely ruin, but they definitely kind of tainted a little around the edges by putting the fiddly bonuses in there as well.
Yeah. So at least that is an interesting thing that they tried to do. They also made certain spells rituals.
Yes.
So that wizards didn't have to spend slots on them, essentially, is what it boils down to.
Yeah, and anyone can be a ritual caster too, so.
Yeah, so if you're casting a ritual and it's marked as a ritual spell, then during any sort of downtime, you can just do the ritual, cast the spell. It doesn't take a slot, but it does take like 20 minutes to do.
Yeah.
So shit like identify, that you go, this is so useful, but I don't want to prepare it because then it's taking up spells that I'll do something with.
Yeah, it's specifically spells that you never used in combat anyway, like the alarm, which is like, oh, now your campsite can't, if anyone comes near it, it sets off an alarm. You know, you shouldn't have to memorize a combat slot for a spell like that.
Yeah, comprehend languages is like, I'm not really casting comprehend languages in the middle of combat, but it's a useful thing to know.
Yeah. Now, this isn't the first edition to do this. It's just a nice thing that it's done.
Yeah.
The ritual part.
I do like that they just went through the spell list, marked some things as rituals, and were like, look, you can do this. It's fine.
Yeah. No.
Fourth Ed did it.
It's a holdover from fourth edition, which also did it. But it's not like either one of them did it better or anything. They both did it, and it's both good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to mention that that does exist.
That's fair. Now, John, what would you say is your favorite thing about this edition of this game?
Oh, man. I think the best thing that 5th edition did was really get to, like, make you get to the core of what a character is quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you were saying with picking your sort of prestige class at level 3, you get to be whatever your idea is a little faster.
Yeah, that's true.
And the idea is very self-contained within whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
So if I want to be a, you know, trickster rogue, like my entire concept is a rogue that also has magic, you go into trickster rogue, you do that, and you go along that line.
Yeah. No,
so instead
fair.
Of trying to multi-class into like, oh, I'm a rogue, and then I took some wizard levels, and I do whatever, they tried, because they hate multi-classing, to just put a couple of those classic multi-class things.
Yeah, the ones that people always want to do. Like Eldritch Knight's there for that person that won't not play a sword mage or a fighter mage.
Yeah.
Because everyone's got that friend.
Although they also have a different sword mage thing under Wizard, better one.
Yeah, and then an elf one as well, in case you were missing that. But then again, that's just because D&D knows where their bread is buttered. And their bread is buttered with the fact that every party has that weird guy who's always a fighter mage.
Yeah. So you have many ways to go about doing that, and
still none of them are going to be good enough for that guy.
Well,
that
I mean,
that guy's a weird guy.
The wizard one's pretty good.
Yeah,
I'm not going to lie.
It's a fine one, yeah. And you can even do it with a warlock by making a pack blade dagger warlock who gets a bunch of stabs off with touch attacks.
Yeah, you're like, what do you do? Well, I just stab fools. Yeah, that's all
so
I do.
There's plenty of ways to accomplish those old tropes of multiclassing in this game, and it is kind of laudable that you don't have to do it through a more janky system.
Yeah, the stripping things down to what it is and then going from there, it was good. I like that to a degree.
Yeah, that's fair. My favorite thing in this game is going to be the it's maybe the first game D&D game that has unbuckled the magic item treadmill.
Because
fourth edition did it as well, but not in the core book. You had to get like the Dark Sun player's guide or something to get it done. In this game, the magic items are not directly connected to your character's advancement and progression. You don't have to assume a certain amount of magic items.
Well, yeah, before it was just sort of a math calculation that you're like, as I level up, so do their defenses and their to hit. So I always have to get at least a +1 more to my hit and my defense at certain breakpoints, or else I'm just going to be bad.
Yeah.
You don't really have that. If you get a +1, like, magical item, it's not like, oh, great.
I needed this.
Throw it in the pile.
Oh, good. You're saying it doesn't have the flaming prefix as well?
Now having a +1 weapon is like, oh, that's actually a thing.
Yeah. They've kind of moved them back to the rarity they used to have. The other thing, though, is that you can no longer, like, buy them. Which means it's a minor problem in fifth edition. Money is basically pointless. Like, they might as well have removed money as a concept.
Well, yeah, once you get past like the first level and you have 50 gold and you don't know what you're doing, like, you go on a couple adventures, you get to level 2 or 3 and you're like, what do you have? I have 1,500 gold. What do you do with it? I don't know, man. It's like 4 gold a night to live like a king. What do I do?
I'm swimming in arrows over here. We're good.
I can't really go to the local magic shop and pick up a +2 thing of like full plate.
By the time you hit level 3 or 4, you are done with money. And there are certain classes that need money compared to other ones. Like, rangers need money for their arrows, but also because they pick up spells eventually, but they are the only class that picks up spells that doesn't get a free component pouch.
Yeah.
So they need to buy that shit.
Well, also, any of your spells that are like, oh, you have to use a pearl worth 100 gold. You're like, that's fine. I will spend 1,000 gold, get 10 of these, and anytime I need to do it, I'll just throw a pearl at someone's head.
Yeah, in any edition previous to this, I would have complained about how there's a bunch of spells that require money, because it was always like, oh, that means the wizards need money.
But now it doesn't matter.
Now, who fucking cares?
If your wizard ran out of money, everyone else would be like, fine, sure, here's 20 million gold. I do not care.
Yeah, so anyway, that's something that's a little weird. It's not like it's a bad thing. It's just sort of a leftover. Now, it leads to problems, which you'll always see people on Reddit being like, my party's trying to build a castle. How do I stop them? And the answer is always don't. Let them build a castle.
Why do you want to stop them?
Quit trying to stop fun.
My players are having fun, and it's not the right kind
of
fun.
This game has too much role-playing in it.
Oh my god, you guys, my players are drowning in role-playing.
I don't know where do I find the off button for this role-playing? Spider-Man, turn off the role-playing. So, least favorite thing?
All right. Least favorite thing in this. I have harped on the multiclassing thing a lot in
sure,
this.
Sure, 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 sure.
And I don't want to necessarily say that's the worst thing in this, but it's very annoying. What I will say is probably the worst thing in this is the very clear best and worst options for things when you look at a lot of classes.
Yeah, there's a lot of chaff in this book.
There is so many underwhelming things when you look at any character or feat or anything like that. If I look at the feats and I go, all right, what do I want to get? For most characters, there's like 2 or 3 that you go, oh, I want this.
Yeah, those are the ones that matter.
And you might look at some other ones and go like, oh, that's cool. That's a neat thing that I could have. But you're also going like, man, I'm not even getting one of these until like level 12.
Yeah.
I don't have the ability to get something interesting. I have to get something good.
Right.
So a lot of the problem I have with 5th edition is that you don't get anything interesting. You only get something good.
Right. By the same token, we were talking earlier, there's a lot of chaff options in this book. And people will try to point out that chaff options are the role-playing options. If you're like, well, I'm taking a 4-element monk because I heard they're bad, and I'm taking it for a role-playing challenge. eat a dick. That's not a role-playing challenge. A role-playing challenge is playing a good character. You don't need to choose bad things to do a good job.
Yeah.
Also, anytime you roll a low stat, you're not winning at role-playing.
No. What you're doing is then playing a stereotype of some sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
You're like, oh, I rolled low in intelligence, and now I'm going to play a disabled person. You're like, please do not do that.
Do not. That doesn't make you a good... You're not good at role-playing now. That isn't how that works.
Yeah. It is definitely a thing where I'm like, you can't just get more role-playing out of playing something bad. You were going to have the same amount of role-playing. It's just now you get to be like, well, I'm not as powerful as other people. You get to be like a hipster of D&D. You're like, oh, I don't go in for that. I like my classes to be a little more homemade.
Right, right. I play the class that's meant for the little brother.
I play a little brother in my game.
I'm trying to think about what I want to put for my least favorite thing about 5th edition, and ultimately it boils down to how it gives credit to a homophobic neo-Nazi for contributing things to the game. I picked the homophobic neo-Nazi contributor, and it's the less controversial one. That was a whole thing in the development where I don't really want to go into this. People are probably worried that this was going to be the whole episode. But the development of this game was a tumultuous, rocky mess of idiots trying stupid things.
Yep.
And one of the stupid things they tried to do was recover the Pathfinder levers. The folks who, when 4th edition came out, fell sway to Paizo's marketing strategies and followed over to Pathfinder and are now firmly entrenched there. And they were like, we'll make it just like the game you thought you liked back in 2000. We'll put it, it's fine. We'll put it all back the way it was. Those people aren't coming back. They own 3-foot-high stacks of Pathfinder books.
Yeah. They're so invested in this that even if you did go, oh, we just reprinted 3.5, they go, great, I already own all of that and all the Paizo stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe if you put out a supplement that's neat, I'll get it, but I don't care.
And the mistake wasn't even making 4th edition. The mistake was making the OGL.
Yes.
Because it created a situation where Paizo could be like, oh, we're just going to make the exact same fucking game and steal your audience.
Yeah, you can't stop us.
Yeah.
Try and stop us.
But one of the things that they tried in an attempt to kind of earn cred with a circle of gamers on the internet that are or a sphere called the OSR, the old school role playing sphere of, we've only covered one game that purports to be an OSR game so far, and it was definitely not. In an attempt to get OSR players back in the fold, they reached out to a couple of OSR luminaries and were like, hey, come contribute on the book. We'll put your name in it and you'll get some money and we'll get the street cred of having your names in our book because you guys are OSR.
You get to say that you are credited in a D&D main book and we get to try and grab some people back.
And when they did this, they announced they were going to, and Twitter was like, no, don't. Please don't.
Please do not do that.
Here's a long list of reasons you shouldn't do that. And they took the long list and did the exact opposite of what they should have done with it.
Yeah.
Which we won't go into, probably for legal reasons, I'm sure.
But no, I'm going to go into it.
Yeah.
So Zach S., and Zach S. is a piece of shit that shouldn't be anywhere near anything.
He's maybe a piece of shit, allegedly. I have heard people say that he is a piece of shit.
He's 100% a piece of shit, guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter. All the people who were like, no, here's all the things that he's done that's horrible. Here's all the abusive things he's done. Here's all the horrible ways that he's used his audience to try and harass people. Gave it to Merles, and Merles gave that list to Zach S.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, here's all the people that say that when someone tries to say anything bad about you, you harass them off of the internet. Here's their names. I'm sure you'll be fine with that.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even, realistically, you could boil it down to, this guy's not the HR person at Hasbro at Wizards of the Coast. He's the lead designer of Dungeons & Dragons. And his response to, oh, we have an HR complaint. We have a complaint that someone is a threat to the game and to you guys. We have a real HR complaint. And his response was, oh, good. Email me, the lead designer of Dungeons & Dragons, and I will definitely do the right thing. Instead of going through way into the proper channels at Hasbro, you have elected to send your stuff to me, a hateful pile of silly putty in a polo shirt.
Yep. And boy, howdy, did he do the exact worst thing with it, and it was terrible, and he's never apologized, and boy, was he definitely on stage at fucking, like, E3 or whatever.
Instead, both of the people that he picked as OSR cred people went fucking off the rails ballistic bad for him.
Yeah, it was that and RPG Pundit.
Pundit, yeah, Tarnowski, who lost his mind and basically is now didn't have it in the first place, but now he's basically a homophobic neo-Nazi. And he's been like, oh, are you going to take my name out of the book? I will release secret emails in which you say horrible things, Mike Merles. He got in bed with some bad people.
Yeah.
And then when they were like, hey, you got in bed with some bad people, instead of going, oh, sorry, he said, we didn't get that much in bed with them.
Look, they stayed the night, but we didn't touch.
Yeah. So that was a mistake. And that means that every time I look at my copy of 5th edition D&D, I have to remember that people got paid for this game that shouldn't have, that I do not want to own a game with their names in them. And they've gone ahead, like the actual Wizards of the Coast people, like not Merles, people above Merles, which honestly should be everyone.
Well, yes, the people who are like, oh, hi, we run actual properties and have an entire department about this.
Merles, the living embodiment of the Peter Principle, he failed upward until he hit a point where he could rise further through stupidity no further. The people above his head were like, you, stop talking. Us, let's take their names out of the games. But only the digital version, because it's hard to change the print runs.
Well, I mean, they can't grab people's old print things and white out.
But they have said that they're going to remove them from future print runs, and yeah. I don't know that they actually have done that yet. But
well,
they probably have
a giant stock of already printed books, so it's not like they're doing a print run anytime soon.
Yeah, that's true. But It tainted the line. And for me, that's going to be my least favorite thing about this edition. The fact that they were like, oh, we need these OSR idiots, and we're going to take no help from anybody, and when people try to help us, we're going to react in the worst way. And then when it comes back to bite us, we're going to react in the worst way.
Yeah.
Even the higher-ups at WOTC were like, you, Mike Merles, shut up. For 2 months.
Yeah. He was put in the doghouse for 2 months. He wasn't allowed to tweet. And now he's back and
on stage talking about Baldur's Gate 3.
Quit tainting things.
Yeah, I wanted to like Baldur's Gate 3 too. It's made by a company I like. Larian. They made the Divinity Sin game, or Original Sin games, or Divinity Original Sin, that game.
Original Divinity Sin.
The Original Divinity. The white kind of fluffy stuff you get served at Southern Thanksgiving.
They made Divinity, and it was okay.
It was all right. No one really likes it, but it shows up at every hot dish.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. They make good stuff, and they were going to make a cool Baldur's Gate 3, and then this fucking thumb gets up on stage and is like, hey, I'm still here at Wizards of the Coast. You can't get rid of me.
Ugh. Hey, guys. We have opinions about things. Please write to us at systemmastery@gmail.com and let us know. How much do you hate us?
Yeah, that's fair.
Because we're a machine that is running on your hate.
Well, I run on anxiety, so this is going to ruin me, but fine. Thanks. Great. Whatever. So anyway, that's my least favorite thing about the game. John, would you play 5th edition?
Yeah. I mean, I am playing 5th edition.
It's hard to avoid it. It's the zeitgeist.
It is a game that is, you know, the easiest to find a game for.
And we have friends who like it.
Yeah. And... you know, if you've got a friend and they like running it and they want to run a game, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, sure, my copy has some magic marker taken to it pretty liberally.
Also, don't pay Wizards of the Coast any money until they get Mike Merles out. That's what I'm saying!
Ah, that's a perfectly fair statement. I mean, we are in a privileged position where we don't have to because they gave us free access to D&D Beyond because we did something at one of their events.
Yeah. That was basically our payment.
And this is us biting them in the ass, just like everyone else they invite to do anything, because they have bad judgment.
Shouldn't have done it.
All right. Well, anyway, we both would play the game. Fine. So there you go, John. I guess we're on to house cleaning notes. We already did the Jumbotron stuff. So, the announcement mastery stuff.
Yeah. And now I think it's just time to say goodbye to all our friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
M-I-C, see you real soon. K-E-Y.
Why? Because we love you.
We're going to get sued. Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get sued.
Donald Duck. Sued by many different things.
The mouse is coming for us. Well, at least we're not going to get sued in Canada. You know, John, I don't know about you, but I have heard on the internet recently that Zach in particular actually did shit his pants
Allegedly shit his pants.
Allegedly shit his pants at the 2017 Gen Con last day at a Center City Mall Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's that rumor going around.
Yeah, I personally can't corroborate. I don't know if it's a sure thing or not.
I mean, I've seen some pictures, but I don't know for sure.
People are saying it. Or maybe he got into pants that someone else had previously shit.
Maybe someone shit into his pants?
Yeah, someone parabolic arced some shit into his pants.
Maybe he was trying to play fourth edition and just shit his pants instead of the table.
Yeah, I'm just saying that I've heard that rumor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you go. Thank you so much for listening. Go to patreon.com/systemmastery and support us. We're going to keep that one brief this time. Thank you so much for listening and supporting us.
We're making 5th ed characters, so join us for that.
Oh, yeah. We got to make some 5th ed characters.
After we just talked about how first level D&D characters are dumb bullshit, come join us for it.
We've got laptops full of D&D Beyond. Why don't we go ahead and make 3rd level characters or something?
Or we can just make the weird crap that isn't in the main book.
Oh, sure. That'd be fun. Like that Oath of the Ally Paladin.
We can have an Eric Okra show up.
the Oath of the Ally Paladin, which was like the DM's Guild contribution for Pride Month, they were trying so hard to be good.
tried so hard, and you just really missed the mark.
I don't want to be... They were trying so hard. It was made by like 2 queer women. I don't have a good leg to stand on to really come after them, but really, it was like, hey, what was your contribution for Pride Month? This is historic. The first class in 5th edition D&D that by structure cannot be queer.
Yay!
Because allies aren't. That's the whole point of allies.
Hooray.
Anyway, go to patreon.com/systemmastery. Support us. Check out our bonus shows. $1 will unlock them. And thank you so much for the years of your support. The fact that we're able to do this and I can raise a kid is astonishing.
It's absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for supporting us through thick and thin, through joy and vitriol.
Through our ridiculous vitriol this episode.
Yeah.
It feels good to dish dirt.
Yeah, it feels good to finally vomit up everything on Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And, join us on Twitter, join us on our Discord.
That was Mike Merles, by the way. It feels real good to vomit on Mike Merles.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've heard, allegedly, Mike Merles got vomited on, and he loved it.
At a Chick-fil-A on the last day of Gen Con 2017.
Oh, and he just lapped it up like a dog.
The worst part about all of this is that they were at a Chick-fil-A.
That's the worst part.
Mm-hmm. A company that's doing so bad that Texas had to pass a law to protect Chick-fil-A's. A real thing that happened this year.
We'll see you later. Thank you so much. You have a good one.